Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. It's happy Monday to everybody across the country. It's not so happy because it's been loan officer compensation confusion out there across the country, and we're going to be diving into that today on the program. So we're one more time. In fact, I don't know that we're not going to be dedicating this program to this discussion probably for the weeks ahead, for some number of weeks ahead. You'll always be able to go log into our website, www.lickenonlending.com, and you'll be able to see whatever the upcoming shows are. We try to stay flexible. Last year we got into some pre-programs. We had lined up so many programs, and so far in advance it did seem like we had some of the flexibility. We're here to be addressing the hottest of hot issues so that you can kind of figure out what to do, what's going on, at least have a perspective from our perspective of what's going on across there. Today we are starting something a bit new that is I'm excited about. We're going to try it out, see how it works. But we're going to be able to take questions from the audience directly through tweet. So for those of you that have a Twitter account or are able to tweet, you can tweet your questions. So if you tweet in your message, you know how you do that. For those of you that use Twitter, you can go in and tweet in a message, and then at the end of your message put hash sign or the pound sign and put LO comp. Thanks to Andrew Berman and our friends over there at National Mortgage Professional. Andrew is going to be monitoring all of the questions as they come in and shoot me messages and texts so that we can get to as many of them on the program today as possible. Folks, it's so good to have each and every one of you here with us. A special thank you goes out to all of our regular listeners, and thank you so much to so many of you that are listening for the first time. This is a time of a lot of changes going on in the industry, and it's so nice to be able to go to one place to get perspective and color on where's this going, what's happening next. But each and every week we start off by going into what's going on in the world of interest rates. Joe Farr is with us from MBS Quote Line. We appreciate Joe each and every week bringing us an update. Joe, what's going on in the world of interest rates today?
Well, after a pretty wild week, it's kind of quiet right now. We've been in a very tight range all day. Not a lot of price change from where prices ended Friday. And, you know, this is in the face of, some mixed data came out this morning. The core PCE, which is one of the Fed's key measurements for inflation, came in right on consensus at plus 0.1%, and on an annual basis still below 1%, right around 1%, very, very low. And, that certainly gives the Fed some indications of what they need to do with monetary policy, which with that measure you'd expect them to not change. Also coming out this morning were personal income came out a little higher than expected, and the Chicago PMI, seems like all the manufacturing indexes are showing strong numbers, in fact decade long highs in some of these numbers. But as Dan reminded me, our economist, that these are relative to prior numbers, which are really pretty low. So, and it's good to see that the index has moved higher, and it's good to see that things are moving in the right direction. But kind of like housing numbers, you could have a 10% increase in housing and still not have many homes being sold. So. That's kind of true with manufacturing right now as well. Pending home sales, they too exceeded expectation, but unfortunately they just didn't fall as much as the economists expected them to. They were down 2.8% as compared to down 3% as everyone was thinking. So, kind of quiet morning. We were on the air last week, and the markets were closed, but the Saturday and Sunday prior to our last show was the time that things really broke out in Libya. And we kind of knew that that the market wasn't going to like that, and talked about a flight to safety. And in fact, that's what happened Tuesday. The market had the reaction you might expect whenever there's that kind of geopolitical unrest. Stocks fell 180 points. MBS prices improved 16-30 seconds, and the price of oil went over $100 a barrel. So. A pretty classic reaction to things that are difficult to trust, when especially when things are going on in the Middle East. One other kind of interesting note was on Thursday at 2, and I mentioned right at 2, a rumor hit the market that Gaddafi had been shot. Hate to talk about it in this way, but the market liked that, meaning he was not going to be around to mess it up anymore. And so at the time that that rumor hit the market, stocks improved fairly, I don't want to say dramatically, but it was interesting to watch. Stocks went up, MBS prices came down, and the price of oil came down, all starting at 2. And it just kind of shows, the whole market's kind of interrelated in that way. And so for the week, despite data that came out generally better than expected last week, nothing really major, and then average, not great, but average treasury auctions, MBS prices ended last week about 26-30 seconds to the good, which would have meant rates were probably an eighth or so better at the end of the week than where they started the week.
Well, that is encouraging as far as last week, as that fell. We see interest rates falling a little bit, keep some activity going. Do you have anything in mind for this week? I know we got a calendar that's fairly active,
very active.
As much as I try to get him to predict, listeners out there, I try to get Joe to kind of tell us which way this thing's going, but he stays in that discipline. Nope, I'm going to present you the facts and in all actuality that we really.
Well, actually, last week I need to go back and listen to this, but I think I did predict that things would probably improve with that, with all the problems. But that was pretty hard pretty easy to anticipate when the market's closed and big things are happening, you know.
That was it was one of those things where it was nice to pull you into that. I didn't want to call too much attention to it, but I think it's a great idea. So what's going on this week?
Well, the Mideast is going to stay in everyone's focus for some time to come, I believe. And, you know, now there's word that tensions have spread to Oman, another oil producer. And so, you know, that's just going to keep the pressure on and the market's going to be reacting to things that go on over there. But this week is full of pretty significant items, the most important of which, as is usual every month, is the jobs report comes out on Friday. And the jobs report is always a big market mover, but one of the Fed governors was speaking today. The vice chair Dudley was speaking today.
Dudley.
And he was talking about the Fed, and the Fed's received some criticism about inflation and kind of ignoring the food and energy part of inflation, and believing, or economists being concerned, that they're not going to be able to control inflation when it starts going up. And so Dudley answered some of the questions by saying that there is so much slack in the economy right now, so much slack that there is a lot of room for prices, inflation to go up, economic activity to improve considerably he's too concerned about inflation being an out-of-control event. One of the best measures for slack in the economy, the biggest measure, is employment or unemployment or, you know, the jobs creation. And so as we get to these next few months, we're going to start seeing even more important being given to job creation. And within the jobs report is also wage inflation. So because that could really send a signal to the Fed to put the clamp down if necessary. Also this week, there is the ISM index comes out tomorrow at 10, the ADP report, which has been terribly misleading the last few times, but still gets some attention, comes out Wednesday.
Market.
and then Thursday jobless claims. So, you know, I like coming out. I didn't pick on everything that's coming out, but it should be an active week for economic information. But again, you know, whatever goes on, anything, any day could move
a lot based on
information coming out of the Middle East.
Yeah, especially it goes back to your point about what happened last week with Gaddafi being shot and the markets rally on that. It is sounds a little perverse.
The,
you know,
rumor.
The guy gets shot and, yeah, the rumor of it. You know, that
unless
that
there's a double.
There, I mean, a double assassination type thing.
Well, a double for Gaddafi. He's alive and kicking.
Yeah, he's dead.
And fighting.
I don't. Yeah, that's right. Well, that's right. Saddam had his a double going around there for a while, so there was a lot of confusion.
Uh-huh.
Did we really get him? Did we not? So anyway, Joe, thank you so much for bringing us this report each and every week. It's valuable, and your insights. But also, I just love the calm way you handle market data. Usually there's so many people that are so stressed up and so excited about it, but you just do it in such an even way. Appreciate it. Tell your staff how much we appreciate all the work and research they do as well. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginny Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. Remember, we're going to be starting. We'll be reading your questions online. You can tweet us by just tweet into your Twitter account the question that you have, and at the end of it, put #, L-O comp, and we have Andrew Berman out there who's going to be looking and reading these questions and bringing them to me. So we're excited to have that all go on today so we can really dive into what is going on in your head. And but you know who started this whole mess? You know who's responsible for all this? Yeah, listeners, you all really know. It's Alice Alvey, because she reported it first here on the radio program. I'm joking, of course. Alice, it's so good to have your giggle and your friendly voice on here. You know what? If there's anyone who's going to be bringing me bad news, it's Alice Alvey, and there's a lot of it's been going on. It's out there, Alice. We truly thank you and your staff there at Mortgage U for all the research, especially your partnership with Wetzel Trott for what you guys do to help keep the industry informed. What is going on today? LO compensation, 32 days left to go, Alice. I see that in your notes. What else are you talking about?
Well, yeah, as you mentioned, we're going to be talking about that more in the show, but I did want to let everybody know in terms of our LO comp update, I want to try and keep in this segment that the small businesses, there is a hearing scheduled for 2 o'clock tomorrow for the impact of the Dodd-Frank or this loan officer compensation on small businesses. So I know that that was out in the news, that folks were hearing that the Small Business Administration had appealed to the Fed to say you've got to postpone this because you didn't do enough detail for us to be able to implement this on this and be in compliance with the Small Business Administration's requirements. So we'll hear what more tomorrow, what comes out with that hearing, and of course we'll give you updates next week as we get more information on that. But we do have a new proposed rule that we have to watch. It was buried within a final rule. So the good news was the high-priced mortgage loan threshold for jumbos is being moved to 2.5% instead of the current 1.5%. That's good news. It'll be effective for applications April 1st. However, within that, the Fed also is proposing changes that will have a little bit of a negative impact on our other high-priced mortgage loans. I know many of you stay away from these. You actually have things built in your system to say, you know, I'm not going to originate a loan that has an APR more than 1.5% above the average prime offered rate. Well, in that, if you perhaps have a low loan amount or HELOCs very often become vulnerable to this, that you may trigger needing an escrow account if you trigger the high-priced mortgage loan rule. What the Fed is proposing is to extend that the consumer would have to carry the escrow account for 5 years. Today, the rule only requires the customer to carry it for one, and then the lender can take a look back and see if they would drop the escrow account. So that's one downside to it. The second thing is this proposal is also seeking comments on whether or not they should extend the exemption to high-priced mortgage loans. There's a for condos for the escrow account to extend to PUDs. They also want to provide an exemption for creditors that serve rural or underserved areas. You can see somebody from the Farm Home Credit Administration got into HUD to say, or to the Fed, I should say, to say, hey, wait a minute, we're too small. We can't handle having escrow accounts on these high-priced mortgage loans. And so it seems like they're trying to make a carve-out for this group of rural underserved areas that don't originate more than 100 loans that they would not have to escrow for high-priced mortgage loans. I don't know how you all feel about that, but I don't like exceptions. That's a competitive exception, I think, that's people have to take a look at. Also in this proposed rule, we will get a new piece of paper, everybody. I know you're feeling like, hey, how can they add another one to the pile? But there are two more. And actually, this was all in Dodd-Frank. So now the proposed rule is out there to provide we would have to provide a disclosure to the customer that explains what an escrow account is and how it works and the effects to them if they don't have an escrow account. And again, this would be we have to give this to the customer at least 3 days ahead of closing. So this is a proposed rule out there by the Fed. It hadn't actually been published as of press time today, and so we'll have to wait. It'll be a 60-day comment period. So jump on it now before you forget. There will also be a disclosure for servicers that when they end an escrow account, they'll have to issue a disclosure telling the customer about that, right? You know, more paper. A couple of bills that are interesting that we're watching is there was a new bill introduced, House Bill 769, to make sure, again, they've tried this many years before, but this one would be, again, to get credit scores free with your free credit report. So that's House Bill 769. We also see House Bill 557, and this is a proposal to change that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau would actually report up to the Treasury as opposed to now under the Dodd-Frank, it's slated to report under the Federal Reserve Board. So depending on who you like better, I've got to dig into that a little bit more to think, you know, I don't know, Dave, if you have an opinion on that, on who we care if they report to, I think less under the Fed the better maybe, but we'll have to check into that a little bit, see what the pros and cons might be.
Who knows which one is the better one? We'll talk more about that in the Hot Topic
right.
Section maybe. All right.
Yeah, we have not seen any movement. As you may recall, the Fed had a proposed rule out there for anti-money laundering and suspicious activity reports that would have to be filed by lenders and brokers. That comment period closed earlier this month. We will continue to watch that for you to see if anything comes of that. And then those are the main bills and so forth and rules that we are watching for you as of today.
We appreciate you bringing that to us again, and you know what? There's been some recent birthdays here, and we didn't sing happy birthday to you online, but I was off harassing your business partner, Jan. I didn't realize you both had. Jan Wetzel also had a birthday here this weekend, so be sure to give her a warm hello and a happy birthday. I definitely heard from her immediately after I said, old Jan, last week on the radio program. I got a message within seconds. If you wonder what the speed of internet's like, just insult Jan on the radio. You will find how fast you can hear from her.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
You know she took that as fun. Yeah, she had fun.
Oh,
with
I
it.
Know she did. We
yeah.
always have fun.
Because it was
Jan.
So much fun last
are...
week. Why not do it again?
Well, I think
right.
we just
yeah,
did. I brought it up again.
Are you supposed to be pointing out our birthdays?
No. There comes a point for ladies that is a rude, socially unacceptable thing. I better move on to the next
right.
segment before I go into more trouble. Thank you so much, Alice, for bringing that up. And folks, we're going to want to call your attention to the fact that we're going to have Glenn Corso on here for a brief report. For many of you that have been listening regularly to Lickin' on Lending, Glenn Corso is one of the industry leading experts on a host of topics. He's been around forever, but he has a group that his group, which we're going to let him tell you about, it's been studying and working with clients and companies across the country So we're going to have Glenn Corso on for a brief few minutes here in the Hot Topics segment. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. Remember to tweet us your comments and questions about LOComp. You can do so by going into your tweet account, and you can type in your question. At the end of your question or comment, hit the pound sign with the letters L-O-C-O-M-P, and Andrew Berman is standing by to read them and bring them to me over the on a text message or an email message, and we'll get to them as soon as we can. Again, also, we're going to have Glenn Corso on to answer and give us answer some questions, give us an update from his perspective. Well, as we do each and every week, we get into the topic of profitability, bottom line numbers, and we have the one and only guy in the nation with this title, the Profit Doctor, with us again. Andy Schell, what are you going to do? You always have this interesting way of relating something about accounting that's just abstract. It seems abstract when you get started, but you always tie it together. What do you have for us this week?
Well, thanks, Dave. That's because accounting fits into everything that we do, even counting.
That's
like
true.
The fact that Allison Jan's birthday was last weekend. You know,
all
good birthdays are in February. My birthday was last week, too. So I knew there was something special about
them. Oh, happy birthday,
them.
Andy. Happy
birthday. Why did I remember the ladies and not you?
Well, I knew there was something special about them, too. So,
but how old are you? See, we can ask you how old you are, though, Andy.
You can.
All right.
He's not going to answer.
I'm 54, so I'm still a youngster compared to my partners.
Yeah, okay. We don't have to go there now. Don't remind me how old we are. All right, come on. Get on with it, Profit Doctor. What's ailing the bottom line here?
All right, well, what I want to talk about today is our treasure maps. You know, we all have treasure maps. We may not realize it, but we do. And here's one of my favorite movies about treasure maps is The Count of Monte Cristo. It's also a book. It was actually a book written by Alexandre Dumas, who also wrote The Three Musketeers. But he wrote The Count of Monte Cristo, and it's a really interesting story. But the bottom line of it is the point that I'm bringing out is it's about a guy who gets a treasure map, and then he uses that treasure map to find wealth beyond measure. He finds just massive amounts of wealth. And so if you have the ability to spend a little bit of money or spend a lot of bit of money to get a treasure map, how much would you spend for a treasure map? Well, I guess it depends on how much is the treasurer. Well, what if you don't know how much the treasure is going to be? Are you still going to spend money on a treasure map? Well, you might say, for $1 million treasure map, maybe I'll spend $5, $100, $1,000. But people spend money every week on a treasure map in some respects that has very little hope of ever finding a treasure. People all around the country buy lottery tickets, and the probability of winning is hundreds of times less likely than getting hit by a foul ball in a baseball stadium or getting hit by lightning on a golf course. But that aside, the point here is that we need to spend money to buy things that bring value. So I think if I could get a treasure map that would help my company run better and make more money, it would be worth a lot of money. So when I'm talking about a treasure map is spending more so that we can know more, because knowledge is power. So we're going to spend more to know more to make more. So spend more, know more, make more. One of my sayings, kind of like my golf analogy about play to your strengths, avoid the water, and listen to your caddy.
I thought it was swing more. I thought that was the name of the game. At least that's the name of my golf game.
It's kind of like, remember, golf, in accounting, golf is like expenses, and bowling is like revenue. We want for our golf numbers to be low and our bowling numbers to be high. That's how we remember the difference between revenue and expense.
It's a good way to put it.
Revenue is bowling. Okay, so sometimes we need to spend more. We need to spend more to get our operations tuned up and get our reporting accurate. And this is often a very much a disregarded area and can be fatal because people just, let's just go do more volume and don't worry about anything else. Let's take the accounting people and the operations people and put them in the office, turn the lights down, and just don't even pay attention. Don't look at them again. But ultimately, to be successful in business, we need to know more. We need to know more about our business. We need to know about our results and we need to know our strengths. We need to know our weaknesses. We need to know all of our KPIs. For everyone who attended the webinar we just taught, they know about KPIs because we went through that, key performance indicators. Oh, by the way, we're going to start our webinar again, backed by popular demand, starting in about a month now.
Yeah.
And we do all of this. Why do we do all this? We spend more so we can know more so that we can make more because we can be more profitable. And that's why we do all that. Now, obviously, I'm drawing a correlation between a treasure map for our business as being the KPIs, the key performance indicators, and the financial information that comes from our computer systems and our accounting departments. Because having complete and accurate financial information really can be our treasure map. So it may be that we don't need to spend any more money on accounting and everything's running great. And the test for that is if today, if all the listeners on the show will think about, if today, if you think that your financial reports are your treasure map, then your accounting department is running great and your KPIs are set up and your reporting mechanism is easy to understand. But if you don't think that, then it could be that you need to spend more on your systems and training, but spending more with the ROI of we're now going to know more because we're now going to be able to make more. So investing in your business is a good thing. Spending more to get good, accurate, complete, and easy-to-read information is essential. We want for the owners of a business to look at the financial reports. And I'm not talking about the standard balance sheet. That's part of the information that goes into it. But I want really good KPI presentations that become the roadmap. We've got a partner we work with that has red lights and green lights and up arrows and down arrows. That's what I'm talking about. That's what everybody needs. So if your reports are not your treasure map, then I encourage everybody to get on the path to make it so. Just like Captain Picard would say, let's make it so. Get those reports ready because if you spend more to know more, then you will make more. And that's the profit, Dr. Dave.
That is so good. Spend more, and I would suggest spend a little more by getting some good counsel from the profit doctors. One way you can spend a little bit more, but you will know more. No question, you will make more. And the feedback, Andy, that we received from that Campus MBA webinar was just overwhelmingly positive. It was great. You brought out some great points as you do each and every week here. So for those of you that haven't, you should get tuned in to the Campus MBA. Look on the calendar and see when we're going to have those dates. When is the dates on that again, Andy? When are we starting that?
Well, I think it's mid-April. I think it starts up again on the 19th, I think is when it is. And this time it's going
to
be a 6 series instead of 5, and we're going to really highlight some of the areas that we had to gloss over quickly in the last time, including we're going to go deep into leadership and talk about what does it take to be successful in business, and part of that is strong management, and part of being strong in management is strong leadership, and Dave's got a lot of gems and nuggets that are going to come out as a result of that.
Yeah, we're publishing articles every month in the National Mortgage Professional on leadership. So it would be Lickin' on Leadership. We got the Lickin' on Radio program. So anyway, it just rings. I don't know why it works so well. But anyway, folks, we'll be right back with Glenn Corso as we introduce the topic and get into the topic of LO compensation. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry. If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan, if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300
combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Licken with Licken on Lending, and I encourage you to start tweeting us with your questions on LOComp. If you go into your tweet and tweet a message, I'm sure all of you guys have a tweet. Don't you have a Twitter account? Let's get it right. And so go in there, tweet a comment or a question, and hit at the end of it, #LOComp, and it will be looking to receive your bring it on, your questions on the air. Folks, we have a special guest, no stranger to Licken on Lending and to our listeners, regular listeners, Glenn Corso. He is the co-founder of the Community Mortgage Banking Project, an advocacy group, an organization representing independent, community, regionally based mortgage banking companies. Glenn is a former senior vice president of the PMI Group, one of our proud sponsors, and we're thrilled to have them be one of our sponsors. He has over 33 years of experience. That's probably 34 or 35 by the time with all the years since that was written, but lots of experience in the mortgage industry. And he is working with companies across America on this very end. Glenn, so good to have you on the program with us again.
Well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks for
having me.
Good. I want to make sure we turned on the right mic there. It's good to have you with us. Glenn, give us a quick update on the Community Mortgage Banking Project. If you wouldn't mind, just kind of give us a little bit of an update since we're having you on as a guest. Let's get in. What do you guys got going on? What are some of the projects you're working on that are so exciting?
Well, we are really working on a number of different projects, all of which really have a pretty major impact on how mortgage banking is done today. I'd say that the biggest project we have going right now is on the risk retention and the qualified residential mortgage exemption, where we're really waiting for those regulations to be issued in draft form by the regulators. And another project we're working on, which has gotten very hot very quickly, is this effort by the GSEs to revise and probably reduce the minimum servicing fee that they require for loans that are either sold to them or securitized through them. And then, of course, we're also working on loan originator compensation. Still lots and lots of questions. I'm on the phone with, we have 42 members in our group, 42 companies,
excellent,
all independent mortgage banking companies. And we get, I'd get on average at least 4 or 5 calls a day now as we're approaching the April 1 deadline with people, either asking me to look at a particular aspect of their compensation plan or some tricky question that's come up that they're not quite sure how they're going to deal with it, that sort of thing.
Well, Glenn, that's really why we wanted to have you on, is to kind of give a perspective of what you're hearing. For those of you folks that are not been logging in and reading the LinkedIn discussion group that I started over the holidays, it's now up over 2,000 members that are there. We have people posting questions or posting comments, and it's over 2,071 members as of today. That's astounding to me. Many who are posting up some great comments. I asked Glenn Corso and Alice Alvey and Andy and Joe Farr, all those regulars on the radio program, but also Glenn to be one of the moderators and giving some great feedback. And Glenn, I want to thank you so much publicly for your contributions to this message group or to this discussion group. It's really great to see your feedback. Let's get into some of the things that you're seeing, some of the questions. If you could talk, I know we do want to get real specific here, unless to the extent that, let's get as specific as you feel comfortable. But what is the nature of some of the questions? I mean, what is resolved out there within the client group that you're working with, and where are the questions? Well, how would you categorize those two groups?
Well, I think the things that are resolved now is I think everybody understands that they really need to have a compensation plan in place that essentially pays the individual loan originators the same amount for every loan that they work on. I think everybody's accepted that. They understand that. where the difficulties are still sort of sorting themselves out are, number one, people really want to incent their loan originators to produce profitable loans. I mean, that's the essence of the business. And people are really grappling with how can you do that given the Fed rule. The second thing, which is a more narrowly focused kind of thing, is there's a big problem with bond loans. You know, most of the states or many of the states have these tax-exempt
bond
programs.
Yep.
Yeah, and people are very familiar with that. The difficulty with those are those programs typically place very tight restrictions on what an originator can charge. And so as a result, people are telling us, gosh, you know, how can I, under the rule, how can I pay my originator less if they work on a bond loan than if they work on their normal, you know, FHA, VA, conforming conventional type loans? Doesn't seem that the Fed rules allow me to pay less.
Yeah.
And my answer to them is, you're right, they don't. And we've been around and around with the Fed staff on this, and they just absolutely won't offer us any kind of interpretation to permit those kinds of things to be done. So I think a lot of lenders are telling me they're going to have to drop out of the bond program.
I was talking to, I think it's one of your clients, but also someone that is out there in the industry that's in the central part of the United States, and they were saying that they are going to probably actually have to exit the bond program for this very reason. It just, their particular state just does not allow the flexibility. So it's one of those things where, you know, I don't know what to say. But it is it's good to get that perspective. Let me cover a couple quick questions with you, Glenn. The
sure.
Department of Labor is making everyone pay at least a minimum wage or something to that effect.
Yeah,
any idea of the salaries or minimum wages that are being paid by most of the independent bankers out there? Just kind of a range.
Miguel?
So, Dave, as a matter of fact, that issue came up just today when we were talking with some of our members. And from what I'm hearing, most of the members are planning, at least the companies we talk to, are planning to pay whatever the minimum wage is in their state. So this particular company that we were talking to is a California company, so the state minimum wage there is higher than the federal minimum wage. And what they're planning to do is that they will pay their loan officers, because they're employees, they will pay them the state minimum wage and then have a compensation plan paid on basis points that will take into account the fact that they are getting a minimum compensation of I guess it's $8 an hour in the state of California. So 8 times 40 times whatever that is mathematically, that's how they're going to deal with the Department of Labor issue.
Okay, so most of, we're hearing any ranges. We're going to get into this. I know, by the way, listeners, Glenn has agreed to come on. We're going to just focus on Glenn's comments, and then Glenn has got so many phone calls to return and get back to his clients that we're going to let him off the radio here just in a few minutes. But I want to kind of get a flavor of this, Glenn, but what we're hearing is that there's some range of salaries. Some of the banks seem to be paying a large base salary and then paying a very low the percentage of the loan amount, and then independent mortgage bankers seem to be paying, you know, let's just pay them whatever we minimum have to or some amount there, and then paying the much larger percentages. Is that kind of what, do you have any insights or any comment to that trend that you're seeing?
Yeah, so we've been seeing a little bit of that too. What we've been hearing is that, for instance, some of the bigger banks are going to be paying, as you're suggesting, a salary type of compensation. And then, in terms of basis points, they're talking about in the range of 30 to 40 basis points per loan.
Yeah.
Whereas with the independent mortgage bankers, you're hearing much more of, we're going to compensate on a minimum wage type of basis so that we won't have a Department of Labor issue. And then we're going to be paying somewhere in the neighborhood of 60, 70, 80 basis points in some instances.
Yeah,
but that's what we've been hearing so far.
Then it gets into some of the more dicier issues, those that have, you know, net branch operations. And for those companies that are still allowing some of their retail people to broker out, Glenn, and that are saying, how do you handle the wholesale model of those loans that you want to get brokered out? Anything that, are you offering any particular advice to some of your clients or any general themes of how people are beginning to grapple with those issues?
Well, yeah, what we're telling them is that if you're a mortgage banking company where you normally fund and close loans in your own name, but that you will broker out loans on occasion because you simply don't have an outlet for that kind of loan, then
right.
Then there we say that you can probably pay the originator a different amount because you're in a brokerage mode at that point. But we said that you could be challenged about that, but if it's the exception rather than the rule, you should be okay.
That is interesting. We've already got some questions. As I start digesting some of the questions, I'm going to invite Alice and Joe and Andy to jump in. Alice, let's start with you. If you have any specific questions for Glenn before we let him go, and then I'm going to read through some of the questions that are coming in.
Yeah. Hi, Glenn. Welcome to the program. It's great to have you back and always hear your insight.
Thanks,
I love
Alice.
To hear what you have to say. You know, what's starting to come to light as people kind of accept this and come to terms with their plans is, if I am a broker and I now want to use a safe harbor disclosure, you know, as we look at the wording for this, have you seen any good examples of safe harbor disclosures yet? It seems like you could really go overboard with the fact that they make reference to the loan options presented to the consumer are obtained by the originator from a significant number of creditors, but at the same time they say just show the lowest rate, the lowest total dollar amount, and make sure one of them or the lowest rate doesn't have risky features. I'm thinking, can't we just use page 3 of the good faith estimate, or do we need a real expanded safe harbor disclosure?
You know, Alice, I think you would be better off with a somewhat larger safe harbor disclosure. But one thing we're telling people is that you really have to think through the relationships that you maintain with the wholesale lenders in terms of, if you have some relationships where you rarely, if ever, place a loan with them, you've got to keep in mind that you've got to include those lenders in your survey when you're looking at the various options you're going to be presenting to the borrower. And if those lenders really typically present options that you don't want to put in front of your clients, you should really think through whether you want to maintain that relationship, because you just cause yourself a potential world of trouble down the road if all of a sudden you have some state examiner jumping all over you because you didn't show a borrower options from a lender that you never placed loans with, because either the lender has atrocious record on processing, or they always have, you know, they never come through at closing and you always have to postpone closings, et cetera. If you've got those kinds of relationships, cut them off. It's just not worth it to have them.
So you're saying don't really rely on the fact that the law does allow you to just quote from places from whom the loan originator rarely does business. You're recommending cut out the exposure.
Yes, because remember, this rule is going to be implemented and enforced for independent mortgage bankers and for mortgage broker companies. It's going to be interpreted and enforced by the 50 state regulators. And so if you think about that, and if you think about how much trouble the industry is having getting straight answers from the Federal Reserve now, think about then when 50 state regulators and
right.
you know, hundreds of examiners get in the act. So I'm saying, don't be brave on this one, and be very prudent, and let somebody else go first and be the trailblazer, so to speak.
That's good advice, and that's what we're seeing. More and more people are saying, I'd like to try to do this, try to accommodate some of these folks, but you know what? The exposure, the plaintiff bar is out there and just licking their chops at the ambiguity that's in all of this, Glenn. And I tell you, we've got a question that came in from James Barnes I'd like to put out there for you, Glenn. And again, Glenn, appreciate so much being on the program with us, knowing how busy you are. But I have James Barnes, one of our listeners, wrote us this tweet that says, how are lenders allowed to compensate originating managers? Insights there?
Yeah. So here's what we've been telling people. We've been around and around with the Fed staff on this, and essentially the way that you're allowed to compensate originating managers is to compensate them first and foremost. If you want to do it purely on a volume basis, that certainly is permissible. So you compensate them for the loans that they personally originate in the same manner that you compensate all your other originators.
Correct.
Then for the loans that are produced by, let's say, the branch that they're managing for the company, but they don't personally originate those loans, you can do it purely on a volume basis, i.e. 10, 15 basis points per loan, wherever you want to set it. That's acceptable. If you want to have an expense control factor in there, which many times people do, they want to give their managers an incentive to control the branch operating expenses, then what you do is say, okay, for every loan that's originated by the branch, we are going to credit you with X amount of revenue. And that's that X, whatever that number is that you set, has to be the same for every single loan, no matter what the type of loan it is. And then from that, you can deduct actual expenses of the branch and then use that resulting number as the compensation for the manager. In that way, you've controlled for terms and conditions of the loans, and you're giving the manager, in essence, the same revenue credit for every single loan, no matter what the type of loan.
James Schott back with another question. Is that how it's going to work for regional managers and those that manage multiple branches? Same basic formula, Glenn?
Yeah, I think that's trickier. And to be honest with you, I haven't run into too many people that have regional managers that are still originating loans on their own. So if a person is not acting as a loan originator, then their compensation is outside of this rule. So I don't know of too many regional managers that still originate loans on their own. I suppose there are some that do, though.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let's jump. We've got some. I want to get around to Joe Farr and Andy Schell. Let them pop a few questions before we let you run off. Let's start with Joe.
All right. I have two. One real quick one, then a little longer one. But when you talk about paying minimum wage, are people using that as an advance, if you will, toward commissions earned? Is that deducted from the
Great
amount
question.
Of commissions calculated?
Almost like a draw.
Joe, I understand your question. Some people are using it that way, others are not. Others have instead, when they set the number of basis points that they're going to be compensating their loan officers, in setting the number, they're taking into account that the loan officers are going to be paid base compensation of, whatever the minimum wage is.
Okay. And then regarding the whole thing about retail shops brokering loans out, my reaction to that would be to say, if it's only 1 or 2 or 10, 5% of the loans we do, let's just not do it. Are you hearing many people do that?
We're hearing some people do that, but a lot of times what happens, and you know this better than I do, there's a relationship involved, either a referral source such as a realtor or something like that, where the originator really wants to go the extra mile to accommodate the borrower, and so as a result, telling them, no, we're just not going to do it, they'll come back to you and say, well, gosh, so-and-so realtor referred me, 20 loans last year, and I really want to be more helpful than that.
Well, that's good.
Let's see.
Hi, Ann. This is Andy. I have a quick question for you, too. That's okay, Dave?
Good. Yes, I was going to say, I was just going to. For the sake of time, jump in.
Well, Glenn, it seems to me that people are out there making decisions based on kind of two paradigms. One is fear-based, and one is facts-based. And we obviously want for people to make decisions based on the facts. And part of the fear is driven by, if I lose my $3 million branch that I make $6,000 a month on, that's a lot of money for me. And what's the consequence to me for my non-compliance. If this one branch wants me to pay them a certain way that I'm not sure it's right, but I think it's close, and I'm on the edge and I'm worried about it, and my cost for them leaving me is $6,000, what's my penalty going to be if I don't perfectly follow the rules?
So, you know, right now, it's difficult to say exactly what the penalty is going to be. Once the Dodd-Frank provisions kick in, and they'll kick in starting at the beginning of 2013, then what happens is that the penalty is that if you have been found to violate the loan originator compensation regulations, then you have to pay the person back. It's a defense to foreclosure for the borrower, and you have to pay them back all of the interest that they've paid on the loan back to when the loan was originated. And so that's a pretty severe penalty, particularly when you think about the fact that all of a sudden it won't be just that one loan that you're fighting over, but it'll be all the loans that were originated under that compensation plan have that potential defense to foreclosure and could come back to you for interest dating back to when the loan was first originated. So it could literally wipe your company out.
So once Dodd-Frank comes into effect, non-compliance is I'm out of business.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it could wipe your company out, and that could happen. You know, that won't happen for a couple of years yet. It won't be until 2013, but it's there on the horizon.
So I heard fear-based policies are the way to go.
We're not going to tell you how to do it, but boy, do we have a big stick. Glenn, thank you so much. We're going to get into some more answering of the questions in a minute. Glenn, thank you so much for being with us this week. Would you be available to come back on? Because I got a feeling we've got so many more questions than we're going to ever be able to get to in this broadcast, which means we're going to be sticking with it. So when you are available, let me know. We'd love to have you back on and just help sort through the issues. Thank you so much, Glenn, for being with us. Have a great rest of the day.
All right. Thank you also, Dave. Take care. Bye-bye.
You betcha. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break. But remember,
time for the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar Data Track.
I recently came across a photo essay that I wanted to share with you all. Check out www.jfpetersphoto.com and click on the link to Just a Dream, America's Foreclosed Homes. John put together a collection of 38 pictures from foreclosed houses in the upstate New York area. His pictures tell pieces of the stories from the families that once lived in those homes. Truth be told, there's no real news story here. Just a reminder that with all the statistics and stories and numbers and projections we are constantly bombarded with every day in this industry, in the end, we are impacting real people with real families. Most of the photos included are not about the damage and destruction some foreclosed borrowers do to punish their banks. They are, instead, the pieces of the family's histories that were left behind after their move. Again, you can see this photo essay at www.jfpetersphoto.com. For the Mortgage Minute, this is Rob Katz with DMD. I'll be back next week with the news I think you should know about.
This has been the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar Data Track. Catch Rob's news of the week right here on the Lickin' on Lending Show or online at dmdinc.com. PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Licken, and we've got Tony Garitano on the phone. He gives us an update of what's going on in the world of technology each and every week. And there is a lot going on, Tony. We just talked to Bruce Backer of Loan Sifter, who's doing quite a bit in the area of loan compensation. You mentioned some of the other companies that are out there moving well, but it's really impressive to see how some of the technology companies are beginning to respond. What's the word you got on technology for us today?
Well, Dave, today I have a cautionary tale for you and your listeners.
A cautionary tale, all right.
Yeah, we'll see how this one goes over with you. I shared some study results from MoreTech that said that technology spending was going to be increasing by 14% this year, which is good news.
Talked
a little bit about Xerox's study last week about how lenders are investing more in technology, especially around electronic signatures and e-disclosures. Well, MoreTech, the original study that I referenced that talked about technology spending increasing by 14%, well, they came out with a part two to that study. It's called their Industry Outlook and Lenders Response. Part two says, sure, lenders are spending more money on technology, but they're doing so specifically around the area of compliance, which is not a surprise.
I wonder why. Yeah, not surprising. Not surprising based on this discussion that we've had today.
I know, and it's probably more discussions that we're going to have going forward. It's an ongoing issue. But what the author says, Jeff Lebowitz, he warns, he said, quote, "I am struck by lenders' reliance on conventional tactics. Lenders are increasing technology spending, and they are motivated by compliance requirements. But," he says, "they have avoided the high-leverage investments in business intelligence and analysis." So I guess my cautionary tale to you, Dave, and to your listeners is, it's great that lenders are investing more in technology. I was very encouraged by the Xerox numbers and the fact that tech spending is going to be increasing this year. But, and this may fall on deaf ears, I know lenders have a lot to deal with. I would, as Jeff said, encourage lenders to think about business intelligence, analysis, quality control, and due diligence, and not just compliance.
That is such a good word. We're so close to the end of the show here. I appreciate you bringing this on to us. Spending in technology is now going towards compliance. Not surprising when we consider the LO comp discussion. Tony, thank you so much for your contribution to the program on technology. Appreciate it very much.
Let's run back
and try to ramp through some of these questions that we have with the rest of our panelists, folks. We just thank you so much. There's been so many questions that have come in. What are the most popular compensation packages that mortgage loan originators are being offered? I want to get into that discussion. We literally have 3 minutes, so we almost have no time. Tune in next week. We're going to continue with this discussion. It'll probably just be us, our panelists, as we're going to be going through a lot more specific. Alice, I want to get into some of the, and let's go through each one of it each real quickly. We only have 2 minutes, so just real quick. What do you think is the most popular packages?
Okay, the straight up sales, you know, straight up 150 basis points, no base pay, and then monitoring that they meet the Department of Labor minimums.
That's a good point. Joe?
Same thing, just a percentage of loan amount with a look to make sure that historical profit measures justify the amount of commission.
Yeah, that's a great point. Andy?
Yeah,
profit
same
doctor?
For the most part, cost basis points on volume plus a fee per loan and make sure you're meeting the minimums. And that's obviously for a retail shop.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I'd love to see us focus kind of, I mean, we focused on the retail shops today. I'd sure like to see a focus next week on the wholesale or the broker side.
We are going to do that. So those of you that are listening and wanted to hear, what do I do? I'm a broker. You come in, stay tuned next week all the way through the program. That's what we're going to focus and dedicate the bulk of the discussion towards is what do brokers do in this world? Joe, thank you so much for pointing us in that right direction. Folks, stay tuned, and we'll have the tweet session up next week to be able to have you tweet our questions as well at that point. Sorry that we couldn't get to every one of them. As you can imagine, this is a bit of a big topic. Have a great day, and tune in next week and tell your associates about it, your friends and those in the industry. Appreciate you passing the word about us. Have a great day, everybody.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Crowline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.